this teacher, be to remember the best serve I'd ever hit. He said, I want you just to think about that, just to picture it. Imagine how you were breathing. Hear the sound of the racket hitting the ball. Picture the face of the opponent who just watched the ball fly by. It's called an ace, in case you don't play tennis. And then he would say to me, he says, okay, now I want you to imagine you have just done that 15 times in a row. Now that kind of stretches me because I've never aced anybody 15 times in a row. I think three or four would about reach the end of my limit. He says, now you've just done that 15 times in a row, and I want you to step up to the service line, and I want you to stand there just like you have just done this 15 times in a row. How would you approach the line? You know, how would you walk up to the service line? How would you be holding yourself? How would you be breathing? How would you be standing there, Roger, if you've just done this 15 times in a row? Well, let's put the other guy on the side. He's Pete Sampras. You've just aced him 15 times in a row. Let's really make this good. How would you be standing there? What kind of confidence? Now, he said, I want you to hit the 16th serve right now, just like you had done it 15 times in a row. Clean service winners. There was just one problem that I always had with that teacher. And that was the gap between reality and that wonderful imagination. Would you open the Word with me to 1 Kings chapter 18? And look at verse number 41. And perhaps you'll see what I'm getting at. And Elijah said to Ahab, go, eat, and drink. For there is the sound of a heavy rain. Would you repeat that last part of the verse that starts with the word for with me out loud? For there is the sound of a heavy rain. One more time. For there is the sound of a heavy rain. Of a what kind of a rain?
Heavy.
Anything strike you as a little strange about that? They haven't even had dew for 42 months. They haven't even had a sprinkle for 1,260 days. It has been absolutely a drought for 3.5 years. 3.5 years has not even been a heavy mist. So when Elijah said this, there is the sound of a heavy rain, he was saying something that I believe the Lord wants to teach me and us about prayer. And in case you hadn't guessed, we are focusing like a laser on this subject. There is the sound of a heavy rain. Maybe it's been dry in your life for 42 months, 1,260 days, 3.5 times. There is the sound of a heavy rain. What does that statement mean to you and to me? Into our prayer life, into our connection with our God today. Now, it's no secret that Robert Schuller has taken Norman Vincent Peale's place in the scene in America, Christianity, and is now championing the cause of positive thinking under a new heading. It's called possibility thinking, isn't it? And some time ago, I read a book of his by that title, and quite frankly, you can say what you want to about Robert Schuller, but there's some good things there and some excellent things in that book. And by the way, I've been to his pastor's school and discovered there's some excellent things happening beneath the surface at Crystal Cathedral that you don't always know about. So be careful what you criticize, you know, just from the outside. You know, people have a tendency to want to be critical of this or that or the other thing, and the Crystal Palace has taken its share of licks, okay? But in that particular book, I would like to quote a few sentences from Dr. Schuller, first of all, about what he calls impossibility thinkers. Did you get it? Impossibility thinkers are people who immediately, impulsively, instinctively, and impetuously react to any positive suggestion with a sweeping, unstudied, irresponsible assortment of reasons why it can't be done, why it's a bad idea, or how someone else tried it and failed, or how much it will cost. Dr. Schuller characterizes these impossibility thinkers as problem imaginators, failure predictors, trouble visualizers, obstacle envisioners, and exaggerated cost estimators. Their attitude produces doubt, stimulates fear, and generates a mental climate of pessimism and fatigue. They are worry creators, optimism deflators, confidence squelchers, and the end result is that positive ideas are buried, dreams are smashed, and projects are torpedoed. Wow. Ever been around anybody like that? Life, right? Life. Yes. Wow. When it comes to your prayers, are you an impossibility thinker? I remember hearing somebody say about another person last week, oh, it's hopeless. They'll never give their heart to the Lord. Continuing to quote the possibility thinkers, perceptively probe every problem, proposal, and opportunity to discover the positive aspects present in almost every human situation. They are people just like you and me who, when faced with a mountain, don't quit. They keep on striving until they climb over, find a pass through, tunnel underneath, or simply stay and turn their mountain into a gold mine. Great people. These faith builders, hope boosters, confidence creators, enthusiasm generators, optimism spreaders. I see Elijah as God's great possibility thinker. When he says, go eat and drink, for there is the sound of a heavy rain. That man is a great possibility thinker for God. Amen? That's what he is. Can someone turn this up just a little bit? Let's see. Have I lost our PA man? I'm feeling, my voice is already on the weak side, and now I'm feeling like I'm having to push a little bit. I don't know what, yeah, maybe Irwin can help us back there. There is the sound of a heavy rain. Thank you. Thank you. That's much better. If you would take the bulletin, the listening guide for today, on the front cover of the bulletin and cross out the title that I printed earlier in the week, I would really appreciate it if you would cross out that title and put the new title, and that is The Sound of a Heavy Rain. The Sound of a Heavy Rain. I think that thought, that phrase from Scripture, as I've been praying over it, had, you know, I woke up at 3 o'clock this morning and that phrase was coming to me from Scripture. I mean, the sound of a heavy rain, it is just a key. It's a key to everything. It's a key to have power in private prayer. It's extremely important to look at life, not just as it is, but as it can be through the eye of faith by God's power, because basically He's the one that made the universe. I mean, He's made the world. Nothing is too hard for Him, right? There's the sound of a heavy rain. So lock that in. Lock that in. Now, in the story of Elijah, you have a sequence of answered prayers. It's absolutely incredible. I mean, first of all, you have Elijah praying for disaster, that it's not going to rain, and it doesn't for 42 months. You have Elijah praying for the restoration of the widow's son, and the child is brought back to life. You have Elijah praying for fire from heaven to fall and to consume the sacrifice, and the fire falls and burns up the sacrifice and the wood and the stones and the water and the altar, and everything is consumed. And now today we're going to see him praying one more time. The prayer of faith was to Elijah what the rod was to Moses. It was a symbol of his connection to divine power. And when he held it up, the Red Sea was divided. Water came from a rock. Israel's armies were victorious. Whatever. It was an instrument to bring glory to God. And that is exactly what's going on here in Elijah's prayer. He wants to see the drought broken. He wants God to show his mercy again to Israel. And so he says to Ahab, go eat and drink, for there is the sound of a heavy rain. Have you ever heard the sound of a really heavy rain? How heavy? I remember one time going through a hurricane at Corpus Christi, Texas, Betty. And I think I heard the sound of a heavy rain. We were holed up in somebody else's house because we were living in a trailer house at the time. And they said, you better not try to ride this out in the trailer house. So we went to somebody else's home that was a little more substantial. And I certainly recall the sound of some heavy rain, Corpus Christi, Texas. I recall going through, hearing the sound of a heavy rain in a tent in Chattanooga, Tennessee. We were having an evangelistic series, Bob, in a suburb of Chattanooga. I was pastoring at the college there at the time. And one evening at the meeting, I've never been in a meeting like this before or since, because before the meeting was over, everybody was hanging on. I mean, to literally hanging onto the tent poles just to try to keep the thing in place. It was this big tent, I don't know, several hundred people present, and everybody was hanging on. And you want to know the sound of a heavy rain when you're in a tent and that rain is coming down hard. It makes a noise. You ever been there? Pretty exciting, especially when that thing is moving. I mean, the tent, it's blowing. I suppose the most frightened I've ever been was over Texas somewhere, I think east of Dallas, in a Beechcraft Bonanza on an instrument flight plan. And the rain was hitting that plane so hard that I thought the windshield was going to come out. In fact, I really thought I was in hail. I didn't know what I was in. And I kept begging the controller to tell me what was ahead and how much more of this I had to go. And all he would do was say, well, the 737 10 miles ahead of you says it's just light, moderate turbulence. Well, thanks. Just because the 737 thinks it's light to moderate turbulence, that doesn't do me any good. You know, I'm hearing a little bonanza. I'm not sure their light to moderate is going to feel light to moderate to me. I'm not sure I even want to keep going this direction. You know, I can remember, Carol, that was frightening to me. You know, I still remember the fluttering in my heart as I just kept, you know, having to bore straight ahead into that, wondering if the windshield was going to come out at any time. You know, I mean, perhaps it was just rain. I suppose it was just rain. But if you're going 200 miles an hour, a little private airplane, and that rain is hitting you, it can feel like, you know what I mean? Pretty scary. The sound of heavy rain. When Elijah said, there's the sound of a heavy rain, how was he hearing that? My friend, when he made that statement, there wasn't a cloud in the sky. But there was a great possibility thinker for God on the ground. And he was listening through the ear of faith. And what he heard became a call to prayer, just like the sound of a church bell. And I want you to notice that he heard the sound by faith, and then he prayed for the reality. Mark it down. He heard the sound first by faith, and then he prayed for the reality. He didn't say, oh, I hear the sound, so I can just skip the prayer now. I mean, it's coming. I mean, nope. He heard the sound by faith, and then he prayed for the reality. 1 Kings 18:41-42. And Elijah said to Ahab, go eat and drink, for there's the sound of a heavy rain. So Ahab went off to eat and drink. Pass the potato salad. You know? Where's the juice? Oh, this dessert's wonderful today. Ahab went off to eat and drink, but Elijah climbed to the top of Carmel, bent down to the ground, and put his face, what? He put his face between his knees. Okay, here's Ahab. Here's Elijah. Top. You see any difference in those two postures? Any difference at all? Wonder why Elijah didn't invite Ahab to come pray with him. It has been suggested that Elijah's words were actually a reproof to the wicked king, almost as if to say, go ahead, eat, drink, be merry if you can. That's all you can think about after all that's happened here on Mount Carmel. Then go ahead. Find the best place to go out to eat, you know. In fact, one writer using the language of the last century, I'm not sure if this was T.D. Talmage or whoever it is, but paraphrased Elijah's words in this way. Get thee up to where thy tents are pitched on your royal upland sweep. The feast is spread in thy gilded pavilion. Thy lackeys await thee. Go feast on thy dainties, but be quick. For now that the land is red of their traitor priests and God is once more enthroned in his rightful place, the showers of rain cannot be long delayed. Be quick then, or the rain may interrupt thy carouse. Wow. You know, I picture Ahab eating, and I suppose it's a pretty little tent that they pitched there for the king. Probably blue and white stripes, don't you think? All the silver, all there for him. And yet, it's kind of sad, isn't it? Because his life is over. It's ended some time ago. Yeah, he's just like a beast that's being fattened for the slaughter at this point. There comes a point when further appeals no longer are made. You know, Jesus finally said to Judas, what you're going to do, do quickly. Didn't he? What you're going to do, do quickly. And maybe that's what Elijah is saying here to Ahab. Go, eat, drink. What you're going to do, do it. So while Elijah is praying, Ahab is feasting. After all that has happened, he acts like he has just been to the theater and he's been entertained at a good play. Wow, that fire was great. That really did crackle. Never seen fire burn up stones before. Man, I'm hungry, aren't you? Where are we going to eat? Let's go out and find something good to eat tonight. I mean, that's kind of where he's coming from. I tell you folks, when we leave here today, we need to leave with more than just a good appetite for lunch, don't you think? I'm really weary of playing church that way, where the main issue after service is where we're going to eat. With that bit of introduction, let me look quickly with you at seven characteristics of powerful private praying as I see exemplified here in the story of Elijah. Number one, Matthew 6. By the way, Bob, I think you were out helping set up some tables when I mentioned it earlier, but thank you so much for coming to my rescue last Sabbath. Really, really appreciate your ministry here. Matthew 6, verse number 6. Jesus said, when you pray, go into your room, close the door, pray to your Father who is unseen, then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. Ahab is gone. Elijah finds a quiet place on the top of the mountain. He is alone. Go into your room and close the door. And I think what's being talked about here is not just physical isolation, but mental concentration as well. Close the door on wandering thoughts. Ever found yourself reading a page and something and thinking about something else? And then you wake up at the end of the page and you say, my goodness, I didn't even think a thing about this. I was just going through these words. What an abomination to the Lord. I mean, if a friend would talk to you that way, how would you feel? Pretty cut down, right? I mean, they were talking to me, but I could tell they weren't even thinking about me or what they were saying to me. They were thinking about something else. I mean, what kind of a communication is that with our great God? So, when you pray, go into your room and close the door and pray to your Father who is unseen, your Father who sees what is done in secret, then he will reward you. Failure to shut the door guarantees ineffectiveness in your prayer life. You've got to shut the door. Characteristic number one, separation. And then number two, picture his position in prayer. Now, what does that position say to you? Chapter 18 of 1 Kings, verse number 42. He bent down to the ground and put his face between his knees. What does that say to you? What does that communicate? Humility. Reverence. You know, when a person's down in that position, it's kind of hard to even recognize them, isn't it? We lose our identity. Now, it's interesting that when Elijah has been God's representative and he's been speaking to men on Mount Carmel, he stands tall, just like an oak tree. But now when he is man's representative and he's speaking to God, he does what? He bows low. Pretty important point. In one sense, we as Christians are royalty. We are children of the King. We have every right to the throne room of heaven. And that's all well and true and good. So stand tall, Christian, but never forget your roots, your original name, your humble origin as sinner. And there is a time to bow low. And when you're talking to the Creator of the world, you better bow low, right? You better bow low. There was a pastor who was leaving church, and he and his wife were walking to the residence, which in this particular case was just close to the church property. And this was one of those occasions when he was feeling really good about his sermon and how everything had gone at church. And Hazel, he was just feeling fantastic. And so he was walking along the street and he said to his wife, he says, "You know, dear, there are very few great preachers in the world." And she said to him, "And one less than you think, my dear." George Washington Carver, you know, the scientist who developed hundreds of useful products from a peanut. Quoting, "When I was young, I said to God, 'God, tell me the mystery of the universe.' But God answered, 'That knowledge is reserved for me alone.' So I said, 'God, tell me the mystery of the peanut.' And then God said, 'Well, George, that's more nearly your size.' And he told me." Continue to quote, "Near my home there is a street light, and as I was passing by one night, I noticed that as I moved away from the light, my shadow began to lengthen." Ever notice that? "It increased in length as I moved on, and then when I went back and I stood directly under the light, there was no shadow at all. When we get away from the light of the world, we begin to think more highly of ourselves than we ought to think. It's when we're closest to the light that we get the truest measure of ourselves. If we know Christ, we can't be proud. If we know ourselves, we must be humble." Amen? That's characteristic number two, humility. Now, by the way, where did Elijah get the idea that he should pray for rain? Was it because his water had run out? Look at the first verse of chapter 18. And someone read it for me, would you? 1 Kings 18, verse number 1. Who's got it? Okay.
"After a long time in the third year, the word of the Lord came to Elijah, 'Go and present yourself to Ahab, and I will send rain on the land.'"
Well, what a coincidence. The Lord tells him. And he goes and he does it. Interestingly enough, see, he doesn't say, "Well, God, you made the promise, so since you've promised, I won't even have to pray. Ahab, scoot over. Would you set another place for me at the table? I'm hungry, too. This has been a big day." No. God's promises are not to restrain or to replace prayer. They are rather to incite us to pray. God's promises are designed to incite us to pray. It's like a mold that we pour our prayers, our life into in order to shape it, to give it direction. We have got to pray. Just having his promise is like having a check that's been signed, but it has never been endorsed or it hasn't ever been deposited in your account. You ever had a check that's given to you and it didn't get into your account for days or weeks or whatever, it got misplaced? Well, then how much good did it do in your checking account? I don't care how much the check was for. If it hadn't been endorsed and hadn't been put into your account, it was doing you absolutely zero, right? The same way as God's promises. They have to be endorsed, they have to be claimed, they have to be deposited. And so he makes a promise, we base our prayers on that promise. That doesn't mean we don't need to pray. James says, you have not because you ask not. Would you repeat that with me? You have not because you ask not. Boy, that to me is a very important principle. For a long time I forgot about that. That is a very important principle. Our great God wants to do so much for His children, but because of the great controversy and the battle between good and evil, He has chosen to withhold and to restrain Himself in many respects, and He waits for us to ask. That's part of the justification before the universe for Him to do what He wants to do. You're asking, your prayers, your requests, you have not because you ask not. Elijah based his prayers on God's promise. So, principle number one, separation. Principle number two, humility. Principle number three, God's promise. And number four, here comes our great possibility thinker. Look at this. Compare chapter 18, verse 43 with Mark 11. 1 Kings chapter 18, verse number 43 and Mark 11. Let's look at them back and forth. Chapter 18, verse number 43. Go and look toward the sea, he told his servant. And he went and looked. Now look at Mark 11. Mark 11, verse number 24, therefore I tell you, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it will be yours. Go and look toward the sea, he told his servant, and he went up and looked. Therefore I tell you, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it will be yours. There is an awesome power that is released when you believe. It is an awesome power that God has placed within every one of us. All things are possible if you believe. The most hardened sinner can be converted if you believe. The most impossible marriage can be healed. Nothing's too hard for the Lord. You pray, believing, it is possible. The most impossible dream that seems like it's been smattered and smashed can still be fulfilled if you believe. God, do as you have promised. That's what Elijah is saying. And when he sent his servant to look for the rain, he was practicing the principle of watch and pray, not wonder and pray. I usually wonder and pray. And there's a big difference between watching and praying and wondering and praying. Do you know what I'm saying here? Big difference. By the way, who's the servant? Who's the servant? I can't prove it, but here's who I believe. It's the widow's son. I don't think it was a court-supplied servant from Ahab. I think it's the widow's son. He sends the servant and he says, go and look toward the sea. He comes back and he says, what? Nothing there? What a pity if God were to send shiploads of blessings to your dock. And you don't even notice them, and the ships leave, never having actually been unloaded because they have not been received by you. Elijah said, go, you know, look, go look, look toward the sea. Fifth characteristic of powerful private prayer is it was definite. So often I think we just kind of shoot something in the air and we just say, God, bless me. God bless her. I think we need to almost eliminate the word bless for a while. Get a little more specific. Let me show you in Luke 11 how specific Jesus was in his instructions to his disciples about praying. Luke 11, beginning with verse 5, he said to them, suppose one of you has a friend and he goes to him at midnight and says, friend, lend me 3 loaves of bread. Now that's pretty specific. He didn't just say, give me some food, give me some bread, give me loaves of bread, give me 3 loaves of bread. Be specific. Principle number 6, be earnest. It is the effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous person that availeth much. It doesn't mean that you have to shout, you don't have to shake the walls of heaven, but you need to be in earnest.
contrast this request in Luke 11 with the request of a person who would say, well, would you be willing to help me out? I really need something, but I suppose if it's too much trouble, you're already in bed with your kids. It's no problem. I can actually stop by the 7-Eleven on my way home and get it just as well myself. So don't worry about it. It's no big deal. It's no big deal. I mean, it's a little different than what we have here. Verse number 7, the one inside answers, don't bother me. The door is already locked and my children are with me in bed. I can't get up and give you anything. I tell you, Jesus says, though he will not get up and give him the bread because he is his friend, yet because of the man's persistence, he will get up and give him as much as he needs. My friend, are you practicing that kind of earnest persistence in your prayers? 1 Kings chapter 18, verse number 43. Go and look toward the sea, he told his servant, and he went up and looked. There's nothing there, he said. 7 times Elijah said, go back. Now, is this the way you picture this? Son, I want to tell you something. God has a hang up with 7. There's something mystical about the number. So here's my instructions to you. I want you to run out there and back. And on the 7th trip, you're going to see something happen. Just forget the first 6, because it's not going to happen then anyway. You can count on it. God has this thing about 7, so go for it. Is that what we're dealing with here? I don't think so. I think we're dealing with a situation where you send the lad of eager desire to look for a fulfillment or an answer to the prayer that you've been praying once, and he comes back and says, I don't see anything. And then you send him a second time, and he comes back and says, I don't see anything. But you don't give up. You send him a third time, and he comes back and says, you know, I still don't see anything. I've been praying for this to happen. I've been praying specifically. I've been praying earnestly. I've been praying devotedly, and there's still nothing. And you send him a fourth time, and there's still nothing. And you send him a fifth time, and there's still nothing. And there's still a sixth time, and there's still nothing. My friend, the point is, don't quit, right? 7, complete, perfect. It means don't stop until it happens. Don't give up. Don't stop. Don't stop prematurely. Go for it. Often, complete, total process. How often you and I have sent that lad of eager desire to look on the horizon and he's come back with a word, nothing there. And you know what? We say, oh, okay. Guess it isn't going to happen. I'll quit. Oh, really? You may have quit at the very moment that the ships were loading on the other side to come to deliver their cargo to you. They just hadn't gotten there yet. You may have quit when the ships were halfway across the lake, sailing at full force to reach your dock. You may have quit when they were just beyond the range of your sight, through the fog, off the edge of your slip, your boat slip there. You may have stopped. You may have quit just prematurely. You say, well, why doesn't God just do it like this? Because he's not a vending machine. God doesn't want that kind of a relationship with his children where you put in a quarter and you think you just get it. Then you know what that would make you? A ruler. And you and I are not rulers of the Creator God. We are servants. So we are not in a position to tell him when and how high he ought to jump every time we say jump. You know, that isn't the way it works. That's why you pray and you continue to pray and you continue to pray and you continue to wait. And the greatest things happen in life when you're waiting. Powerful private prayer, 7 characteristics. Look at the conclusion. The 7th time the servant reported, I see a little something. A cloud as small as a man's hand is rising from the sea. Hey, Adventist, does that strike a bell with you? A little cloud the size of a man's hand is rising from the sea. There it is, the fulfillment, the hope, the Advent hope, everything that we've looked forward to. So Elijah said, go and tell Ahab, hitch up your chariot and get down before the rain stops you. Meanwhile, the sky grew black with clouds. The wind rose. A heavy rain came on. And Ahab rode off to Jezreel. And the power of the Lord came upon Elijah. And tucking his cloak into his belt, he ran ahead of Ahab all the way to Jezreel. Someone has said that's probably about 20 or 22 miles. I don't know. That came from first service this morning. But if he did that, he was in better shape than I am. That's tremendous. You think about it. What was that about age? Somebody make a crack about my age? Okay. Oh, okay, thank you. There is a sound of a heavy rain. Friend, I would like to have you just repeat that with me. There is a sound of a heavy rain. Do you hear that sound? Has it been dry in your life for quite a while? Maybe more than 3.5 times, more than 42 months, more than 1,260 days? There is a sound of a heavy rain. I don't want you to leave here today and the only thought that you have, where are we going to eat? You know, is potluck ready? Are we going to do this? I want you to leave here today thinking about something else other than just sitting down in your royal tent and eating. What is the biggest problem, the biggest challenge that you're facing in your life? Are you willing to turn to the Lord and to pray believing that God can do something even about that? What various hindrances we meet in coming to a mercy seat. Yet who that knows the worth of prayer but wishes to be often there? Prayer makes the darkened cloud withdraw. Prayer climbs the ladder Jacob saw, gives exercise to faith and love, brings every blessing from above. Restraining prayer, we cease to fight. Prayer makes the Christian's armor bright, and Satan trembles when he sees the weakest saint upon his knees. While Moses stood with arms spread wide, success was found on Israel's side. But when through weariness they failed, that moment Amalek prevailed. Have you no words? Think again. Words flow apace. When you complain and fill your fellow creature's ear with the sad tale of all your care, and then the famous last stanza, were half the breath, thus vainly spent, to heaven in supplication sent. Your cheerful song would oftener be, hear what the Lord has done for me. There is a sound of a heavy rain. I hear the sound. Do you hear the sound? Can you hear it by faith? Can you hear that sound in your life? Can you hear that sound in the life of this church? My friends, I hear the sound. I hear the sound of a heavy rain, and I believe it's coming. We've talked about it. We've talked about, you know, showers of blessing. We've talked about these little dewdrops are falling. We need to change the words. We're talking about heavy rain. We're talking heavy rain. And we talk about latter rain. We're talking heavy rain. We're talking an outpouring that is going to be so fantastic. You're going to wonder if the windshield's coming out. I mean, it's absolutely going to break up the ship, right? Everything that you're trusting in otherwise may disintegrate before your very eyes. I don't know what's ahead, but I think there's the sound of the heavy rain. Dear Lord, take us as we by faith hear that sound. May that be for this church, Lord, and for every person in this room today, a call to prayer. Incite us to prayer, Lord. May we be more fervently, more eagerly, more earnestly on our knees and praying, separated from everything that would distract us than we've ever been in our lives before. Lord, there's one wish, one thing that I would like to see happen in this church is to become a praying church. A church that takes prayer seriously and that believes that you are a promise-keeping God who will miraculously reach into human existence and circumstances and change things that to human perspective seem impossible. Lord, give us that kind of vision, that kind of view, perspective of the great controversy that we're involved in, the physical and the spiritual battles that are going on all around us, the realization that we have not because we ask not. As we pause in prayer, I wonder if you have something in your mind that you have identified as that which is the greatest challenge, the greatest struggle, the greatest problem, the greatest handicap, the greatest difficulty, the greatest burden, however you want to view it, the heaviest thing that's on your heart right now, would you picture that? As your eyes are closed and you maintain an attitude of prayer, would you just give that some kind of a mental picture, image, or view? And I'd like to have you frame that with some kind of a frame that's a definable frame, whether it's a book frame or a picture frame or whatever it is, and take that problem, that thing, that difficulty, that dilemma, that unanswered question, that relationship that isn't working, that financial insurmountable obstacle or whatever it is, put that in the frame. Now I'd like to have you move it down to the left-hand bottom corner of the frame and have it squeeze into that left-hand corner and become smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller until it just is a little pebble. Now you can go smaller yet and make it a little grain of sand. And then while you can just barely see it, it's just a little speck, little grain of sand, would you take the frame that's now open and would you just put a picture in there of the Lord's face? A smiling face, a compassionate face, a caring face, a face that identifies with you and your struggles and knows what you're going through. And I want the contrast to be between the size of the Lord in the frame, which is now all-encompassing, and your problem or your difficulty, which is a little speck down there in the bottom left-hand corner. And would you, with me by faith, just simply say these words over this situation? There is the sound of a heavy rain. Say it out loud with me, would you? There's the sound of a heavy rain. One more time. There's the sound of a heavy rain. One more time. There is the sound of a heavy rain. Now, perhaps we need to do it 7 times. I don't know. If you're 70 times 7, maybe you need to do it 70 times 7. The Lord used that phrase too. But the point is, friend, continue to do it. Continue to pray for it. Continue to reach out by faith, believing that all things are possible if you believe.